Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter at Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley Facebook, LinkedIn Neil Haley, Instagram Total Tutor, Pinterest Neil Haley, Google Plus, and also on Periscope at Total Tutor. And neilhaley.com is the place where all the media stuff is housed. I have two businesses, neilhaley.com, totaltutor.net. So you got to check those two out. And I'm excited to welcome the program, my co-host on Fridays, always, Coach Karen Hall, WPIO Hall of Famer, UNLV running rep and ESPN analyst. Coach, how are you?
Neil, I'm doing great. I'm doing really well. And always fun on Fridays. We get to talk to some really great people that have done some great things in the world of athletics. And today's been no different. What do you think, Neil?
I know our guest is very interesting and with a variety of knowledge is very, very successful. So go ahead and introduce him.
Yeah, I'm excited and thankful to have Coach Walt Evans, who's a former strength and conditioning coach with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Pretty big, Neil. So, Coach Evans, welcome to our show, and thank you.
Good afternoon, Pittsburgh. Thank you.
All right. So, Coach Evans, we're going to jump right into this because, you know, you have a lot of history behind having worked with the Steelers and, you know, the whole concussion, which is a big topic in the world of sports today. So can you first just let us know, as a former athlete, like how did all this come to fruition for you? Like where did it start for you as an athlete and just kind of give us a synopsis of how you became a Steeler coach?
Well, you know, I'm from Pittsburgh, obviously. I'm a native of Pittsburgh and grew up on the north side and went to the city schools in Pittsburgh and coached and taught at South High School, coached football there. And I have degrees in physiology. I got them from University of Pittsburgh and Temple University. And I was working in the school district with obviously coaching and teaching various courses along those lines. And I was approached around 1982 that the Steelers were looking at increasing their conditioning program and just needed to upgrade it. And make a long story short, Chuck Noll hired me to do that. And I was with the Steelers 7 years under Chuck Noll, strength and conditioning coach. And fortunate for me that eight of the players that I trained are now in the Hall of Pro Football Hall of Fame. So I also coached at Slippery Rock University. And so my background, I have a college teaching background. I've taught anatomy and physiology and kinesiology and biology and exercise physiology. One of the places I did it was the University of California in Pennsylvania, there down in California, PA, but also in Rowan College in New Jersey and Holy Family College in Philadelphia and things like that. So so being in sports physiology and various areas of physiology, the link between that and football and sports is pretty obvious. And the last 20 years, I've been in the health and safety business. I've been kind of switched from the professional athletes to the industrial athletes, been in the pharmaceutical manufacturing business, working with research and development and with scientists developing cell growth things. But anyway, so all this stuff ties in to the science and also the performance part of sports.
You know, Coach, now it's interesting when you talk about that background, giving us a great summary of where we're going. Now, tell us specifically how you started as learning about strength and conditioning. When did you really see that that is a trait of yours and you really want to become better, in better shape and learn about helping people become a trainer? When did that kind of happen, like sports type of training?
That started, I started to get into when I was in high school. It's funny, years ago when Sears and Roebuck was on the north side, I went by, bought a 110-pound barbell set and tried to carry it home from Sears down to Manchester and didn't get too far. My dad got upset at me, too. So it's always been part of my life to some extent. And when I got to high school, it was, of course, in the 70s. It was not very well known yet. We started to train. But it's really when I went to college, undergraduate school, Marietta College in Ohio. I really got into it, and as a matter of fact, I originally went there to play football, but I ended up being on the powerlifting team and developing programs for different sports, and then the background, of course, degree there was physiology. So that's how it kind of rolled into one thing and to the other, and then from there went to the Pittsburgh Steelers, make a long story short, and got my master's degree in physiology, and then went to Temple after that and helped their program, as well as Slippery Rock. So it's always been part of my background to do that, and I think it all came from, to be honest with you, when I was a kid, I'd watch Superman on TV all the time. My dad was a moving guy. He had his own moving company. So yeah, I'd see him pick up refrigerators and big ice blocks and things. So all that stuff kind of, it's kind of started that way. But the physiology part of it and the link to performance started during the college years. I got into it. And then one thing just led to another. The field started to open up quite a bit then. It was newly developing, and there wasn't anything until that point about exercise physiology and the impact it had on sports. So that's kind of how it started.
So this could be loaded, but I'm going to say ask anyway, because when you were coaching, so you're coaching then, and then you end up in the pros, were you noticing, or what were you noticing about athletes in their training and their conditioning and the physiques of their bodies and being able to play such a brutal sport like football? What were some of your observations from high school, college, and pro?
Well, high school and college cannot compare to the pros. It's always been said that you go from, it's like going from grade school to college, when you go from anywhere else to the pros. So the players, people don't realize that the players in professional football, like in most professional sports, these are the elite athletes. These are, and for the most part, Karen, these people are genetically gifted, to play the sport. So, and we talked earlier last weekend, and we talked, it's the percentage is like 0.008% of folks actually making it to pro football. So genetics has a lot to do with it, and it has a lot to do with skill development. And the development of the players when I was there, as the game was evolving and the way that it was being played in ball, they weren't physically prepared as they should have been, because it quite changed from the Steelers in the 70s, even into the 80s, for the demands on performance. So I put one of the I did a physiological profile on the entire Pittsburgh Steelers team. The first time it's been done in the NFL. It was kind of like a precursor to the combines. And we did all these measurements and all these things to determine what made these players their ability to be professional football. We find out it was genetically driven, their body types, things like that. So now we had to devise programs for each position to even make them better from a performance standpoint. They had the skills, but they didn't have the conditioning and the strength to develop as the game evolved. And that's what I kind of noticed. And Chuck allowed me to do that, to put this together and say, okay, what do we do here? Because Steelers were hampered with hamstring injuries and all sorts of things. So he says, okay, we've won these four Super Bowls, and we need to move on here. And so we need to upgrade this program. And he was a pretty smart guy when it came to this. And he knew that this helped and this would work. So we put this individualized program in place, and from quarterback to running backs, they all did things, the base things the same, the core lifts the same, but programs are individualized, and that was the key.
You know what, Coach, I remember talking to Andy Russell about it, how once Coach Knoll came, how the dynamics of the organization changed so much. He was such a great mind. He really wanted to, he really was a teacher, wasn't he? He really saw what he wanted and to put it on the football field and change the mindset of the Steelers.
Yeah, absolutely. His idea was that we needed to develop playing strength as opposed to, the bodybuilding and the muscle head stuff, right? So but it was playing strength and functional strength on the field. And he was one of the first NFL coaches to really define that and go in that direction. So we did a lot of things that were different than all the other teams. And in a way, we set everything up so it had to be, so everything related, everything that we did in the weight room or the drills or running we did related to what we did on the field and how the game was played. So it was very specific how we did that.
So, Coach, having known that, so basically you all had an advantage pretty much with the other teams in the NFL because you guys were the innovators.
Yes. Yes, we did it. Being a change engine like myself, it wasn't easy. I mean, it was difficult because we still had a mix of the old players and we had a lot of new players. And so with Chuck's leadership, though, we got their buy-in and things like that. And I mean, people like Mike Webster might have had their own program, things like that, but everybody at some point came around and we were all on the same page. And then they would bring the players in the off season. I would literally have the team myself. I'd have 60 players in the off season, and all the coaches were on vacation. So it was my team.
Okay.
And so that's what they used to call. So how's your team doing? Well, because I had the team for weeks and weeks and weeks, and I ran the show with them. So, but and one thing about the players on that level is that they are self-motivated, which helps a lot. You know, you don't have to tell them this is what you have to do. You know, as opposed, I mean, you're always going to have some, but for the most part, when I was there, those guys were self-motivated. You just had to lead them and put them in the right direction, and and it worked for us.
And what I think, did you see something special, Coach, in the Steelers when you were there? That once Coach Knoll started to really put that team together, did you feel that there's going to be something really special about them?
Absolutely. You know, Chuck was the type of guy. It was funny when I first got there. It was a real unique feeling. I'm glad you asked this because I thought about this the other night. That there was a feeling about this team in the atmosphere. You know, a team takes on the personality of their head coach. And
yes.
Chuck was a low-key guy. You never looked for, you know, you never saw him out there taking credit for things. Or he was a very low-key guy. Just did what he had to do. Chuck didn't do it to get noticed. He did it because it was his job to do, and was the right thing to do. So Chuck, you know, his personality drove this, and the players were quality people too. And that's a big thing that people don't know if they realize. They're quality people. These were good people, but they were great players too. And they developed into players. And so with the Rooney organization and the way they handle things and the way they were, that whole persona, you know, that background of the organization helped do this. And that's why it made it successful. We could do things that other teams couldn't do because we did it collectively. They won Super Bowls because they did it collectively. And we progressed through the years the same way. And that helps. Like, you'll find a lot of organizations in pro football, there's not leadership, you know, from management. That's some of the problems, some of these teams who don't win a lot because there's issues there. But that wasn't the issue with the Steelers.
So, Coach, can you talk about, because the whole physiology background and, you know, the sport today and this whole emphasis on kids starting at a young age, that whole hitting the contact of football, and then that whole idea of the concussion. And I know that's a big issue today, and I know you've done some work on that. Can you give us some insight into the topic, Coach?
Absolutely. This is a bigger issue, I think, than people realize, and it's a very serious issue than people realize or want to realize. Let me give you some stats first and kind of set this up, because I'm glad you asked this, Karen. Let me kind of explain this. You know, more than 100,000 kids are injured every year, whether it's playing soccer, swimming, diving, you know, those type of things. I think 93,000 in those sports alone were injured last year, and then 26,000 children were injured in gymnastics. Basketball has a serious amount of injuries for age groups, 181,000. Now, what I'm saying here is that also in 2015, there was like 1.3 million children had a sports-related injury severe enough to send them to the emergency room. Now, these are sprains, fractures, contusions, abrasions, and concussions. And it's within the age groups of like 6 to 19. Mm-hmm. But, you know, unfortunately, you know, we all know when you play sports, you're going to get injured. So there also were as many as 3.8 million sports and recreation-related concussions every year, you know, according to CDC. And so you have 46 million kids playing sports, football, like I said, cheerleading, basketball. But 12% of those ER visits, that's 163,000 kids, involve a concussion. And that means equivalent to a concussion every 3 minutes. So nearly half of the kids were in that 12 to 15 age group. So what a lot of research shows that, and has been showing, and as these researches are being done, one did show that it takes longer for a younger person to heal from brain injury or head contusion or concussion longer than it does from someone older. And boys recover faster than girls. And girls, a median time for them to resolve symptoms when they have a concussion is like 15 days. Boys is 12 days. So you have these differences here. And the thing is that there's a lot of things that go on, particularly with football. And I'll kind of focus on that a little bit. You know, one of the big issues right now is that scientists and everybody's trying to understand the mechanical events that lead to concussions and trying to determine what kind of helmet, because helmets do not prevent concussions, what kind of helmet can be developed to mitigate mechanical forces. You know, when a player is hit, I don't care, it could be college, pros, young, you know, youth football, you have acceleration, deceleration of the head, rotation, linear impact accelerations, which causes concussions. And so when that happens, local brain tissue becomes deformed or gets strained, what they call in science a strain. And it's been shown to cause brain injury. This is why you have loss of consciousness and you have hemorrhaging and all that type of stuff. But when the tissue strain is high due to contact, the tissue damage occurs, but nobody knows what that level is. You know, how much repetitive contact in the head do you have to have before you get CTE, for example? Nobody really knows that, but all these things that go on. So you have these cellular injuries that accumulate over time, and which can cause and may cause irreversible brain damage. So the brain can't cure itself. I mean, it's not like you can go, you lose some neurons and they come back. They don't come back. You lose them. They're gone. So the question right now is, in all circles, is that are we willingly or knowingly allowing a child to play high-impact sports, knowing that the brain is fully developed at 18 to 25, but we have kids playing that are 6 to 10 years old to 12-year-old in this high-contact sport. So the question is, where do we go with this? How do we make this decision to allow them to play this game? Because, you know, the CTE thing has come out, particularly in pro football.
Right.
You know, the accumulation of this TAW and the high-impact sports, that is right now
Absolutely.
The greatest risk factor for CTE right now.
Now
but it also –
Coach, yeah,
down
sorry,
to
I was going to
– Go ahead.
Yeah, Coach, I'm going to jump in this, and here's the thing. There's so much we need to research more.
Right.
We're seeing that even though you've had some people have had constant head injuries, if they go into certain things after they retire, that brain heals in some ways, sometimes. So
right.
A lot to do with it is that certain brains are different than other brains, meaning that mm-hmm. a concussion on one person is different than a concussion on somebody else. So I think the jury's still out, but I think it's good to be precautionary as much as they're starting to. But we really don't know who's really going to be hurt by this and who will be able to recover. And have you seen that in your research too?
Yeah, it's part of it. Here's the thing. Even the NFL asks these questions. Where does this start? When does it start? How
mm-hmm.
many competitive hits do you have to your head before you have damage? How much damage?
Mm.
So, you know, there are questions, but when you look at the physiology of it, when you have a small child's brain and the skull is not fully developed into the skull,
right.
and it's bouncing around and banging off the skull, that's
be terrible
concern right now. You know, and,
yes.
and like you're saying, we don't know how much, though. And some people are affected by it, some aren't. And when you have NFL players, it affects some not. You know, so there was a study done that was done not too long ago last year that they took 40 NFL players between the ages of 40 and 65, and they studied them, the ones that played youth football from age 12 and below, ones that started early before age 12, and the ones that started after age 12. They found out that the NFL players that started before age 12 had some brain neurological processes damaged, you know, overall.
Wow.
So this is where it's kind of at right now. Where's this thing start at, like you're saying? And where's it start at, and how does it impact people differently? So this all is going to come back to, and Karen kind of related to this last time we talked. What do you do? What's the prevention?
Right.
What measures do you take to reduce the risk of injury? That's where it's at now.
Well, what's the NFL doing right now? And what are some of the things that they're doing that you can share with us?
Well, here's the thing, the NFL. They've done a lot of good things. And I know recently that Roger Goodell, to his credit, I have to say, now he has not everything right. So, but his credit,
yeah.
He has told the teams, listen, you know, we've got these protocols in place now for the players when he's concussed, and you're going to follow these protocols, the athletic trainers, the coaches, the organization. If you don't do that, we're going to fine you $100,000 for each one, $150,000 for every time you do this. Plus, we're going to take your entire training staff and coaching staff and retrain them on this again. And if you don't follow that after that, now it's to a point where they're going to start taking draft picks away. Now, that's from a disciplinary action part of that. But a lot of the teams right now, obviously the NFL, they've cut out a lot of contact in their training camps during the in-season practices. The Seattle Seahawks are training their folks to tackle like they do in rugby. And Rod Woodson, who used to play for the Steelers, now coaches for the Oakland Raiders, is a big proponent of tackling, how to tackle without using the head. So the number one thing they're teaching them to do is there's continued enforcement, and there's going to be a ban soon on contact with the head and blocking back in the NFL, as it is with most teams. So, but they're also saying, listen, you coaches, you know, you need the coaches in your program, the skills of blocking, tackling, to protect these players. So Goodell, you know, he wants to protect the shield, right? But he's got to protect the players. And I think he's finally come around to realize that, and he's got the right people in line now to help do that. So that's one of the big things they're doing. The other thing they're doing is about equipment, the evolution of the equipment, like we talked about the helmet and things like that. So the rule changes they've made, they've been experimenting with when you get a touchback, you start at the 25-yard line. And it even goes down to what Pop Warner's done. And this filters up all the way to the top that they've eliminated the kickoff. So you have all these things going on. So the NFL is trying to do a lot of things. You know, after they've gotten through this denial of the relationship between head trauma and dementia and Alzheimer's and things like that. So they're really trying to do a lot of things. So it's the rules being adhered to. It's the enforcement of the proper way to tackle. And the concussion protocols, all those things. So they're trying to make an effort to do that.
And what is your, Coach, what do you feel? So the NFL is doing a better job. Even this funny thing, I have to bring this up, professional wrestling is doing even a better job. That they understand mm-hmm. that it's not safe to be taking those chair shots to the head, which I took a lot of them, Coach, when I was a professional wrestler. That they like one of the biggest kings of a hardcore, Tommy Dreamer, believes in taking headshots with chairs and to the head anymore. So we're learning more and more about the dangers of this, and I think the precautions, as I said, but I think that just ultimately the NFL can't be all to blame, but now they need to make the changes. If they're forcing guys and guys don't make the team because they have a lot of concussions, then people aren't going to say anything. So it has to be a community-based thing that, guess what? As a coach, mm-hmm. I'm not going to throw my best player out there with a concussion so that a smaller tier player will never complain about a concussion because they want to stay on the field.
Right. I think with the that does happen. But like you said, now they're being – basically forced or enforcing that this is how we're going to do this now. And so when they have their new concussion spotters on the field and it all comes back to educating the NFL coaches, and they do get these massive meetings and people do come in, neurologists, and they educate the coaches on, hey, this is the problem we got here. You know, regardless if we caused it or not, but it's here, we have it, you know? So, but even on the high school and youth level, they got to provide training to these coaches and officials to help them take the steps to prevent and recognize concussions and respond the right way. You know, this is where it's going to have to start at also. Instruct them how to do the proper techniques while they're playing and the rule changes and enforcing those rules. And it even comes back to proper training and conditioning, even on the NFL level, you know, ensuring they get the right medical care, you know, that they understand signs of concussions and physicians are in the ball game. And so, you're right. It's a lot of stuff. So the NFL really has to lead the way on this and set the example.
I know we're running out of time, but I know one thing that we didn't get a chance to talk about, maybe a part two here, Neil, but the whole business side of this, the economic side, because I'm sure that has a lot to do with how things move, at the collegiate and professional level. So, you know, not today, but I'm sure that's something that's possibly in the future, Neil.
Definitely. I have a question for Coach. Coach, how many years were you at the Steelers? What years?
82 through 89.
Okay. And you just really – so you saw the ending of the Steelers super dynasty to leading up to – was Coach – did you have Coach Cowher too?
No.
In your
– No, just Chuck.
No. Just right to that – point right before Cowher game. Gotcha. Okay.
And, you know, people ask sometimes, well, who yeah, go ahead.
No, I was saying, go ahead, Coach. Sorry about that.
No, people ask, well, who'd you train in? Well, Mike Webster, I trained, you know. So And I was roommates with Terry Bradshaw here and there. So there was a close relationship between me and a lot of these players, and for the reason of being, you know, I spent probably more time with them than any coach did or anybody did, because I was always with them, you know, every day for a year. Yeah. So it's, but like you're saying, like Karen's saying, it's a business, you know, and there's business decisions were made. The wrong, I think, ones were made here in the past few years concerning the NFL and addressing this. And it was a business decision why they did that. So, but now I think that that's all cleared out and moving in the right direction. But the players I have,
Coach,
were the
also,
ones that have big impacts. Go ahead.
Coach, also what I was thinking is, because of what happened to Mike Webster, is that your mission to get out there and help kids, especially with the not end up with, you know, having traumatic brain injury, and to really look at CTE and really educate people?
Yeah, that's a big part of it, because, you know, it's telling Karen that, because I was there. I saw how practices were conducted, how things were done, and what Mike went through. And so it all comes back. And, you know, and the thing is, I said this in an article in a newspaper down here in Texas not too long ago, and I said, this is one of the greatest discoveries in sports history, because this is going to impact all sports, all ages, everything. And we're going to look at this thing totally different. Now, it's completely different when you watch a game. It's going to be completely different. Someday, there may be a time where they're going to have a, like drinking, a certain age when you go drinking and voting or driving, they're going to have a legal age at some point of when you can have contact, you know, with the brain. As far as sports go, they may limit that. So, as research goes on, so this is going to be very interesting what happens, but I think the bottom line is the parents need to get educated, the coaches need to get educated and strict to these guidelines, and people who rule these organizations need to make sure that's structured right.
Walt, do you have a place we can find information on you and stuff, people, or should they just Google you or contact?
I tell you, if they can email me if they like, they can do that.
Okay, great. What's your email?
It is W. Evans, and then ERGO at yahoo.com.
All right. Well, very, very interesting conversation, Coach. Again, enjoyed talking with both of you. And this head injury thing, we need to figure it out. We need to speak about it. But we also have to make parents understand that there can be healing through rest. Just like the body recovers from injury, the brain can. But multiple times the brain doesn't recover, that's when the problems occur. And then that's when it becomes worse and worse. It's just the same thing. You don't treat an ankle, right? Coach, what happens? And it never gets treated. It's going to get worse. And then at one point you won't have the ability to use it at all. So, well, thanks, guys, for calling. And taking
right.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Coach.
Thanks,
see you, Coach. Bye-bye. Thanks. Take care. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you.
All right, that was Total Celebrity Show. Take care, everyone.